Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the new energy experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. Hello, and welcome to the episode. Home energy management is a bit of a buzzword in the European energy sector at the moment. Lots of people are talking about it, PowerPoints abound, and here at Delta EE, we talk about a future where energy flows around the home are very much optimized and managed, and households are actively part of the wider electricity system, whether that's manual or through automated responses. And I don't think anyone would argue with this overall trend or direction in the market. With electrification of transport and heat, more distributed generation, more storage, there'll be a bigger role to manage energy in the home. But how is home energy management actually emerging today? Is it a distinct product in its own right, or more of a functionality that's embedded into other products? That's what we'll be exploring today. And I'm delighted to be joined by three people at the leading edge of this embryonic and emerging sector. My first guest is Christian Feist, CEO at Greencom Networks, based in Munich in Germany. Hello, Christian.
Hello, John.
Thanks for joining us. Christian, some people outside of Germany may either not have heard of Greencom or only have heard of Greencom when Centrica recently invested in your company. But Greencom's been around for quite some time. Can you give us a quick snapshot into who Greencom is and what you do?
Sure, absolutely, John. Thanks for the introduction. I mean, we as Greencom, we are an IoT company focused on digitally connecting distributed assets like solar PVs, batteries, heat pumps, or electric vehicles. The fact that not everyone has heard about Greencom might be related to the fact that we are a white label service provider. We are working primarily with large European utilities in the background and offer our IoT platform to enable all sorts of new services for our customers.
Can you Can you give us a feel, Christian, for how big, how small you are, how many partners or how many customers you're working with?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we are maybe first of all, in terms of locations, we are based out of Munich. Our development center is in Sophia Antipolis, which is in south of France. And we have sales representations in several other European countries. We are now going towards 90 people in our company, of which about two thirds is based in south of France on the development side. As I said, we are working primarily with large European utilities in various countries. So we are working in UK, obviously. We are working in Germany. We are working in the Spanish and Portuguese region. We are working in Italy. So basically, we are present in many European countries where we are working with leading utilities. On the other side, we have partnerships with a couple of the large system integrators that help us on the one hand side, obviously, to better scale on the sales side, but on the other side as well, to implement our solutions as our solutions are typically not siloed, but deeply integrated into the existing system landscape of utilities.
Okay. Thanks, Christian. We'll come back shortly and learn a bit more about how you're working and your business model. My second guest is Colin Corder, CEO of Passive Systems. Hello, Colin.
Hi, John.
Colin, likewise, can you give us a brief introduction to your company?
Yes, so Passive Systems was founded in 2008. We're based in the UK, but we have contracts in Europe and also the Middle East. The company is about 60 employees today, but growing very rapidly. We're EBITDA profitable and doubling revenue on a yearly basis. Our proposition is a B2B2C service business. So we've developed a platform that aims to create sustainable value for from connecting devices and equipment in the home to the energy system. So our view is that all the primary assets in a home, such as the equipment that provides heating or hot water or cooling, along with the appliances such as fridge, freezers and dishwashers, all of these devices are capable of delivering a flexibility value into the energy system. And obviously, we're seeing the rollout of rooftop generation in the form of solar PV, battery storage and electric vehicles. The company today is the UK's number one residential rooftop PV asset management company. We have more than 40,000 homes under management.
By that, Colin, you mean you're monitoring those assets?
It's a bit more than that. So the world we see is one where an asset manager, an infrastructure provider, owns the assets rather than the homeowner. So that provider of capital wants to make sure that at the point of installation, all of the equipment that you has been put into the home, so in the case of a rooftop solar system, all of the components that were put on the roof were approved components from verified manufacturers. They want to make sure that all of the legal paperwork associated with putting the asset into the home, in the case of solar, that's typically around 23 legal documents. Hmm. They want to make sure all of that documentation is verified and genuine and authenticated. And then over the lifetime of the asset, in the case of solar, it's between 20 and 25 years, they want to make sure that optimum performance is achieved. So we manage the full life cycle of an asset, whether that be rooftop generation, batteries, heating equipment in the form of hybrid heat pumps or heat pumps, and so on.
Okay.
And we manage that from you know, pre-installation through decommissioning.
And as the energy system gets more distributed, more decentralized, there will be many more of these assets and they'll need managing in various different forms.
Exactly. And there are two opportunities there from a consumer perspective. Is if you have generation capability and storage, as well as smart appliances, then you as a consumer want to know, you know, when do I buy or sell or store energy? Mm-hmm. And so we've developed all the smart algorithms that are able to look at the current market price and the day ahead market prices. We're able to develop predictive control models around the equipment that we're managing. And then on behalf of the consumer, we run those algorithms to help them decide on when they should be buying or selling or storing energy in order to maximize the value to their pocket.
Okay. Thanks very much, Colin. We'll come back to that shortly. But let me now introduce my third guest, our HEM expert here at Delta EE, Arthur Johannik. Hello, Arthur.
Hi, John.
Arthur, you've been working on this topic with companies across Europe now for many years. What's your perspective on the levels of interest in HEM and the range and types of companies that are now getting more engaged and active in this area?
It's a really good question, actually. The interest in home energy management has always been really high as a utopia for the energy markets, but today it's pretty much everyone interested in anything related to the energy in the home or near the home even. So for example, near the home, I've just come back from a conference in Canada where DSO was anticipating a 2 hours overload on its transformers because of the peak demand potentially caused by EV charging. Mm-hmm. When people come back from work. And this overload would cause the transformer's lifetime to reduce significantly. So they are doing HEM trials to manage these peaks. And by managing the PV, the battery, the hot water tank, as well as the EV charging, they're hoping they can reduce this this overload on the transformer. But most importantly, it's the home, really. Anyone involved in managing energy flows in the home. So for example, you have the PV inverter guys. One example is SMA, one of the biggest European players. And last year they launched a spin-off called Coneva, which has for ambition to offer energy management services. Mm-hmm. You of course have the battery manufacturers and those selling them who want to optimize self-consumption, want to optimize time of use tariffs, and they want to offer services to electricity network companies. And then you have everyone else in the home. So connected home companies, you have the people specializing in electricity products, especially around the switchboard.
you have flexibility aggregators, you have everyone looking at the EV charging in the home, and even HEM specialists like Greencom and Passive System actually, who are specializing in softwares who can optimize this sort of solution.
Well, that's an interesting point, Arthur. I'd maybe just like to pick on that hardware and software question and come back to Colin and Christian. So you can see you gave examples of how a hardware led company like SMA or an EV charging company with an EV charger might want to help to optimize energy flows around the home. Colin and Christian, you're both software focused. How do you see this sort of, is it an overlap? Is it two distinct roles for hardware and software?
I mean, yeah, if I may start. First of all, in my experience in that industry, it is clear that there is a difference between a hardware DNA and a software DNA in a company. So quite often what we see is that hardware manufacturers that have a battery or that have an inverter or a wall box, they try to add software platforms to offer additional services, which on the one hand side is not that easy because it's a dedicated hardware, a proprietary hardware. So it's not necessarily possible to integrate hardware from other manufacturers. Not necessarily technically, but from a competition perspective, which creates problems in my opinion.
So you end the up with closed ecosystems potentially.
Exactly. The other point that I see is, as I said, there is a software and a hardware DNA on the development side, and that is quite difficult. I saw many hardware manufacturers that are really struggling to come up with a proper software platform to integrate devices, to manage devices, to do energy management, because it's different people and different capabilities that you need in your organization. And on our side, we clearly decided that we are a software company. We are using hardware from third parties, but we are a pure software company, and we have good software skills in our company, which we want to provide to hardware manufacturers, to utilities, and to automotive companies in order to complement their expertise.
Colin, how do you see it? Do you see it in the same way?
I think for me, the starting point is, how are these products and services going to get to market? Who is going to own the customer relationship? And what are the needs of those channels? And for that reason, we believe vertical solutions such as, you know, a PV integrated PV system solution or an integrated battery solution, these vertical solutions we think will be heavily challenged in the marketplace by cross platforms like passive energy that is integrating a whole raft of equipment from different manufacturers and different asset classes. So everything, you know, today we're integrating everything from rooftop PV, batteries, to heat pumps, to hybrids, to heat networks. In fact, every type of heating that you can put into a home, along with phase change material for heat storage and appliances and the electric vehicle. And the reason why I think the hard manufacturers will ultimately struggle is they clearly are aligned with their own vertical products, whereas from a consumer's perspective, what they're interested in is, how do I get best value for me as a consumer across all my asset classes? So all of the things that I may have in the home that either use or store or generate energy. And that's a very different problem, and no individual manufacturer can solve that problem on their own.
Yeah, okay, interesting points. Arthur, any views from your side in this hardware-software mix? Can the product manufacturers extend their capability to provide this type of optimization? Are some doing this already?
Yeah, I totally agree with what Colin said. It's really tricky for customers to find a way to optimize all their electric loads in the home, given so many manufacturers are providing these products in the home. And today the manufacturers are not necessarily, they don't want to be interoperable with other manufacturers. They think they have the customer relationship. They think they can keep that customer relationship and provide as much value as possible to customers. The problem, as Colin and Christian explained, is there are software specialists that can do this much better than they can do. And some of the manufacturers try to develop this capability in-house, and very often this doesn't really work really well. And some of them will try to partner with others in the market. And I think this is where the interesting battle will come, to see how many manufacturers, especially the ones with the biggest customer relationship, how many of these manufacturers will be good at providing the software. And today it's really scattered in the market.
Well, I'm thinking maybe actually it would have been good on this podcast to have a hardware company, a manufacturer, to provide their point of view. But maybe that's a topic for another podcast. Okay, I'd like to move on in a minute to talking more with Colin and Christian, you both, about Passive and Greencom. But before that, I want to give each of you a challenge around definitions. So home energy management, how would you define it? So can you each give your best shot at defining home energy management in one sentence? Or I'll give you an out. If you don't like the term home energy management, pick what term you do like and define that. So Christian, let's start with you.
Oh, that's a tricky one. let me maybe first start with what I believe home energy management is not about. Home energy management is not the same as classical smart home in the sense of comfort and security. Yeah. So I would definitely distinguish between what Google, Amazon, and Apple are doing, and they will dominate the smart home market, mm-hmm. versus what home energy management is about. Okay. This is when we are talking about home energy management, we are really talking about digitally connecting and managing the energy flows in homes of the most relevant energy assets. And those are distributed generators, those are batteries, those are electrical heating and cooling system, and those are electric vehicles in the end.
Okay, so I've written down here, digitally connecting and managing energy flows in the home from relevant energy assets like the ones you mentioned.
Absolutely. Nevertheless, there is always interfaces to smart homes, so you can always interact with a smart home type of systems to exchange data, to exchange information with those systems, or to utilize some end customer front ends, like for instance Amazon Alexa. Can be used in order to tell you what your energy status in your home actually.
Okay, thanks for that. Colin, how about you?
So John, I'm going to try and give you a single sentence definition. So a home energy management system is a self-learning system that is capable of providing predictive control to primary equipment in the home in a way that generates benefits for the consumer.
Okay, so self-learning system, predictive control for equipment into the home to benefit the consumer. And I guess one follow-up question, Colin, that sounded like quite carefully prepared. How hard is it for you as a company to articulate that to investors, potential partners, customers, and so on?
Challenging. which is no doubt the reason you asked the question. I think within the industry, the companies that own the customers are the incumbent energy suppliers, and I'm talking here primarily about the UK market, mm-hmm. which is a highly competitive market where consumers are actively encouraged to switch between suppliers. And therefore, customer recruitment, customer retention are sort of front of mind issues for the incumbent supply companies. And it's quite challenging in persuading those companies to change their approach around this whole area of introducing home energy management systems into consumers' homes and adapting their own business models to provide different tariffs, where price benefits are embedded in the tariff as a result of using the flexibility available from the equipment in the home. So it's been quite a long journey for us. We've been doing this for over 10 years, but we've been building foundations over that period of time. And just in the last week, we've gone live with Shell in delivering a fully funded hybrid heating service into the market, which is a really exciting development for us. And it's the first of many more to come. And we also are on the verge of launching a service with one of the big six of a similar nature as well. So yes, it's been quite a long process getting to where we are. But the thing that's now driving this are two things. UK generation from renewables in the last quarter was above 40%. Mm-hmm. So the need for flexibility is becoming a pressing requirement by the DSOs and the system operator. And the second thing is the government is at last putting some real emphasis behind decarbonizing heat in the homes. And the UK today, 90% of its homes are heated by fossil, that's either oil or gas. And that just is not supportable in terms of meeting our carbon targets.
Well, I think we're seeing those trends roll out not only in the UK, but across many other European markets to varying degrees. So I think for imagining for both of your companies, it's been maybe longer than you thought at the beginning to start getting scale and traction. But I can certainly see the curve moving upwards. Arthur, I wanted to ask you for your one-sentence definition. So we had Christian's digitally connecting and managing energy flows in the home. We had Colin's one around self-learning systems, predictive control, and around various key equipment. What would your definition of HEM be?
I definitely agree with what both Colin and Christian said. It's really about managing the energy flows around the home for the customer's benefit, but also for the electricity network's benefit. Mm. But when the analyst in me will try to go a bit further in this in terms of explaining this to customers. It's pretty much a range of complexity in HEM. HEM can mean a lot of different things. And if you think about a 2x2 axis, with the x-axis being the number of loads, electricity loads that you manage, and the y-axis being the level of complexity that you provide, or the number of values that you generate from this, you have a whole range of HEM solution in that 2x2. So the basic part usually, for example, involves two loads, so PV plus battery, or PV plus EV, or PV plus an appliance connected to a smart plug. And you do basic stuff like self-consumption, like optimizing time of use tariff or peak shavings, for example. Mm-hmm. But then if you add to the complexity of that, you can go up to a collective self-consumption optimization or smart grid optimization with all possible appliances that you have in your home, etc. So HEM can mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people. And I think we really need to understand if it's a basic, complex, or highly advanced solution that's being offered to the customers.
Okay, so I think all three, well, as I thought, there isn't a single definition of HEM that the whole industry can converge around, but all three of you described a similar thing in slightly different ways. And it's not HEM isn't a single thing, it's a spectrum of things, but all involving optimizing assets around the home for customers and the electricity system. Colin and Christian, let's spend the last part before we bring up the crystal ball on each of your business models. So, Colin, maybe starting with passive. You talked a bit earlier on about some of the things you're doing. How generically would you describe your business model as a company? Are you software as a service? Are you a platform company? You're B2B2C rather than B2C. Can you tell us a bit more about your business model?
So we're very much a B2B2C platform provider of services. In an ideal world, those services would be around, you know, big data analytics, smart learning algorithms, and then applying optimized control. So if I look at our rooftop PV business, where we've got 40,000 assets under management, we collect vast amounts of data. We collect 2 million meter reads every night. Mm-hmm. We do big data analytics, and from that we can identify all sorts of O&M or sort of operations and maintenance issues. We then issue case management tickets and subcontracted installers and O&M contractors go out and fix the problems. So in that model, where we started out, we were a provider of software services for which we collected an annual service fee. What actually happened is the industry came to us and said, you know, we love the services you provide, but we would like you to go further and we would like you to take on board providing a full turnkey O&M capability. So we extended our services to include employing or contracting with our own subcontractors, so the people who would actually go out and physically do things homes, and offered to our investors a fully integrated turnkey solution. And that's where we are today with the solar business. Mm-hmm. We've now gone a step further than that in the hybrid heat pump market, where again, the industry came to us and said, look, we haven't got the capability to do this, so will you build and develop a complete, you know, pre-customer engagement to post-commissioning support capability. So in the case of decarbonizing heat in homes, we're not only providing the intelligent predictive controls that manage the home and optimize its performance in the context of the energy system, but we now provide everything from customer recruitment through to pre-installation survey, managing the installation process through commissioning to lifetime operation.
Okay, so you've gone on quite a journey, Colin, from the original sort of software platform focus to doing many more other jobs for your customers. Is that where you think you will, the direction you'll keep going in, or is it hard to say? Will you just keep responding to what your customers are asking for?
I think for the near term, we will obviously continue to respond to what our customers want. Mm-hmm. I think in the long term, we need to pull back from taking on board so much of the sales and installation activity. Mm-hmm. And I think there will be, you know, I think as the market matures, I'm certain that some of our partners will want to take that in-house. In rather the same way that today, for instance, British Gas in the UK is the largest installer of gas condensing boilers.
Yeah.
So I think there will be we will diversify ourselves of some of these activities as the market matures.
Okay, but as it develops, you need to step in and play a role in helping in that market creation, market development.
Exactly.
Christian, how about you? Have you stuck more in your business model? Stuck to that software focus? Have you extended in the way that Colin described? How would you describe your business model?
Yeah, I mean, we stayed in our home turf on the software side. So our business model is software as a service. We provide our technology against a yearly license fee to our customers, and we stayed in that role. We did not have the need to extend. I mean, we were a little bit broader, I guess, in terms of regional scope. That was quite good for us because there were more opportunities to really stay in our software core competency. And today we are enabling large projects with power flat rates or heating flat rates. So one of the examples that we just kicked off is a large replacement program of 1 million old heating systems in the German market that shall be replaced by a contracting model with digitally connected new heating systems. So such kind of things are extremely exciting for us, but we clearly stay on the software side.
Okay, so when you're connecting assets in the home, then you don't need to put any hardware, you don't need to actually put a gateway or new controls into the home, you can keep out of that part of the business?
Sure, we do. We are using gateways, but those gateways are provided by third parties, and only the software stack that is running on those gateways is developed by us.
Yeah, okay.
So we don't have hardware DNA, but we are using hardware from partners that can do that better than we do.
Yeah.
But the entire software stack is coming from us.
Sure. Okay.
What is interesting, maybe, because you asked as well about the evolution, I mean, that momentum was not there a couple of years ago. So some years ago, for instance, we decided to invest into a joint venture to build up a fully digital energy service company with other partners to create a blueprint to really understand how it works in the market. That was maybe a little bit too early, but extremely useful to understand not only technology, but to understand the business models, the processes behind, etc. So we have experience in that, but we are just providing the software. What we did now, maybe as an evolution for Greencom, we, for instance, acquired a small retailer, a subsidiary from Innogy, which was called Shine. And we are turning Shine into a local energy community brand, not because we want to compete with utilities, but we want to have a speedboat to really implement all sorts of disruptive services like local energy communities that we are enabling. And it is launched as we speak, end of December, we will be live with it. That is something where we slightly move forward from licensing pure technology into licensing entire business models. Okay. So that local energy community concept will be offered as well to utilities as an entire business model, because we learned in the past that it's quite hard for utilities to really understand the business models, how to make money in the future, etc. And if we can provide support, that can fast track a couple of activities.
Okay, I think it's fascinating to hear from both of you how sort of you're both fundamentally software companies, as that's at the heart of your DNA, but you've both had to extend beyond that to help create the market and show what's possible, but each done that in different ways. Now, time, as always, gets the better of us in these podcasts, so we'll move towards the last part of the podcast, which regular listeners will know involves a talking new energy crystal ball, which I'm putting on the table in front of me. So, as usual, the same questions to each of you that we ask in our other podcasts. And let's set the dial on the crystal ball to 2025. We'll keep it brief for the sake of time. So, Christian, Colin, and Arthur. Christian and Colin, I'd like each of you to paint a picture of your company in one or two sentences only, please, in 5 years' time. And Arthur, I'd like you to paint a picture of the HEM sector in 5 years' time. Christian, let's start with Greencom. What will it look like in 5 years?
Good question. I mean, we see our company as one of the leading IoT players in the energy market that enables a heavily distributed energy market. The movement from the bottom, driven by things like, I mean, we all see that Fridays for Future demonstrations, etc., that will pave the way for customers creating their own local energy communities. And the utility of the future will be the manager in the background of those kind of energy communities, providing services, residual power supply, helping the end customers to drive the change towards a sustainable future. And we are the enabling platform behind.
Okay. Thanks, Christian. Colin, how about you?
So because of where the UK is today, I see by 2025, the amount of generation coming from renewable sources will probably be above 50% in certain quarters. That is going to place a heavy requirement on the DSOs and the distribution system operators, as well as the transmission operator, to acquire flexibility services in order to manage local peaks as well as national constraints, particularly around security of supply when renewables are not available. And that in itself is going to drive demand for the type of platform services we've developed, where we can offer a fully integrated home energy management solution that can meet the security supply needs of the system operator at a far more cost-effective way than using conventional generation as the backup to renewables. And as a final point, we ran the Freedom Project in the UK. This was a study involving 75 homes, involving Imperial University as well as Delta EE. And the analysis from that demonstrated that our smart controls could deliver £15 billion of savings to the UK economy through using smart predictive controls to manage multi-vector heating systems such as hybrid heat pumps.
Okay, thanks, Colin. And last but not least, Arthur, the HEM sector in 5 years' time.
Well, I think there are two possible scenarios based on how open companies would be with each other and how interoperability would be seen by these companies. So unfortunately, my experience of looking at the evolution of such market tells me that the majority of the companies think they can hold the market power and be the ones capturing the most value out of them. Mm-hmm. So that means these companies are unlikely to provide fully or even partially open systems for each other to use. And that means we're going to see limited interoperability between most of the largest manufacturers of electric loads in the market. So I think the market will grow nicely, but perhaps not at the pace it could potentially grow at, and not at the pace the market would, especially the electricity market, will potentially need to. So quite optimistic, but still reserved on the fact that some companies will be on their own in this.
Okay, so interoperability and open systems being the key challenge you see. Well, thanks to all of you. That's been a fascinating discussion. It's a topic where I think we could talk for a lot longer, and we'll cover different aspects of this in various podcasts in the next series. So thanks, Christian, for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Colin.
Thank you, John. Thanks for the opportunity to discuss Passive on your podcast.
And thanks to Arthur from our Paris office.
Thanks, John, and thanks, Christian and Colin, for being here.
And of course, thank you to everyone listening for joining us. We've got one more episode left of this series before we take a short break, so we look forward to welcoming you back then. If you listen via iTunes, please do take the chance to rate the podcast with whatever rating you see fit, and we look forward to welcoming you back soon. Goodbye.